There are a lot of screens in my life, like way more than I'd like to admit. Right now, I'm sitting in front of 3 different monitors. Yeah, I know that's a bit much, but what could I say? Plus, on the desk next to me, I've got a tablet and a smartphone. And then in the living room of my house, we've got the TV. There's more flat screens in my car. So what do all of these screens have in common? Well, I myself control what I see on them. I pick the show on Netflix. I select the podcast I want to hear on my phone. I pull up the Excel spreadsheet on my computer monitor. But those are not the kind of screens that we're going to talk about today. My guest today is going to be telling us about the screens we do not control. They're part of a category of screens called digital out-of-home media, and they have the potential to generate income for commercial property owners. That's because they're like billboards along the highway, right? Companies pay the owners of billboards to put their ads on them. So this media is a new potential source of income for shopping centers, plus other commercial property owners too, but we're all still trying to figure it all out. My guest today is going to help us with that. His name is Joe Kangonis. He is CEO of Smartify Media. So Joe, along with my co-host this week, Jesse Michael, is going to help explain digital out-of-home media. Live from New York, it's Where We Buy. That's right. You're listening to Where We Buy. It's the show where we talk with retail experts and we visit the places where we buy. My name is James Cook. I research retail and real estate for JLL. And today we are recording live. We're on the showroom floor at the JLL booth at ICSC New York. So my guest today, what I want to do, so I have it on tape, and Joe, I'm going to start with you, is tell us your name and what you do.
Joe Kangonis. I am the CEO of Smartify Media.
Excellent. I also have a special co-host today, Jesse. Tell us your name and what you do.
Jesse Michael, and I am the co-founder of JLL's Digital Solution Advisory.
Okay. So, Jesse, I asked you here to give us the high level into this space. What we're talking about is dough, as Homer Simpson would say.
For do.
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 What is D-O-O-H, digital out-of-home media? Tell me, and Jesse, like, what is that space all about?
The definition is digital out-of-home. And what we've seen over the last, or what we've heard, really, over the last two and a half years, 3 years of doing this now, is no matter the continent, no matter the types of assets that groups have, they're trying to solve anything to do with ancillary revenue and increase that, but really anything to do with digital out of home, retail media. A lot of it really has to do with, you know, the monetization of these screens.
So, Joe, how has digital out of home work traditionally? You know, because when I think about it, I just think, oh, yeah, you got some screens in the shopping center. But it's way more than that, right?
Yeah, you got to take a couple of steps back, because if you think about outdoor or traditional outdoor advertising, it's the oldest medium in the history of the world. You know, and what's happened now is when you add the D to out of home, it's the digitization of the public space. Now, what that really means is that ultimately, what is outdoor advertising? It's everything that the consumer or the user doesn't control, right? You control your iPhone, you control your computer, you can read a magazine, you could throw that magazine out, you could turn your TV off. But the consumer of that digital medium does not control digital out of home. It's in the public space. So whether you go to an airport, whether you see it on the side of a bus, or a lifestyle center that's been digitized, that's really the value. And then ultimately, there's a P in front of the do, which is programmatic digital out of home, which is the new functionality of how you transact digital media in the out of home space, very similar to online, mobile, and social. And that's really what's driving this industry to retail media, to digital place-based networks. There's a rise of all of these new types of networks. And retail media, for example, is actually one of the fastest growing mediums globally in the world.
So what is the P, programmatic? What does that mean?
Yeah, so, programmatic is the humanless transaction of digital advertising based on data delivered through digital signage. And what that means is that when we deploy an endpoint, it could be a digital display in a retail establishment or a lifestyle center, is that there's specific data points around that display: audience, intent of audience, location, zip code, venue classification. All of that data is ingested in the programmatic ecosystem, allowing a buyer to transact flawlessly in near real time. So, for example, if, Mercedes wanted to advertise and they're trying to target a specific audience, they could do that very well online, but they can now do that very well offline in the physical environment with programmatic digital at home.
So we're talking about targeted ads like people do on Google, but in the real world.
Absolutely.
How does that? Okay, so I want to target women between the ages of 45 and 65 that have this certain income level. I know how to do that online, buy some ads. How does that work in the physical space, though? How do you track that?
Well, when that buyer that's operating or transacting through a DSP, which is the demand side platform, it's almost identical in how they buy online, mobile, and social. Is that the user interface is exactly the same for digital signage at a home. They know the data, they're trying to target a specific audience, they ingest that data into their platform, and then multiple Smartify endpoints will arise, enabling them to not only disseminate that content, but then track that content within the physical world. And that's really one of the biggest changes of functionality of what's driving digital out-of-home adoption.
When you say track the content, what does that mean?
Well, they could pace it. They could day part it. So if they say, listen, I want to target this audience, but I only want to target it during rush hour or morning rush, but then I want to follow that audience throughout the day so that they can move that asset or that content around the city environment with other enabled programmatic endpoints.
So they're not following individuals, right? It's more like, or how does that work? Because you don't track.
It's audience targeting. So, they're not targeting an individual per se. It's anonymous data based on audience, right? So audiences are fluid. You might have a different audience in the morning versus the afternoon. So it's those data sets that define the audience, and that the programmatic ecosystem allows them that flexibility of targeting the audience without wasting a huge amount of ad spend on audiences that they don't want to target.
So you're targeting an audience. How do you know that what demographics are viewing this screen at this time? How do you track that?
So there's a couple of things. If you look at big data in general, big data has come a long way over the past couple of years. There's all these data nuggets that people are leaving behind. Now, we utilize and listen to those data nuggets, whether it's app usage, transactional information, geolocation information, and then we're targeting those audience anonymously, right? So if you're at a bar, say at 6 p.m. during happy hour, you're there with intent. That intent leads to us understanding a little better about that audience. It's not going to be exact, but a majority of the people at that happy hour are there for a specific reason, right? So we want to have the ability to have a display there and target that specific to drive product lift, whether it's transactional information on brands or targeting a specific audience. Maybe they're there to watch the football game.
Conversely, too, at a property, the demographic at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday is different than 6 p.m. on a Saturday, right? So you can start to understand, if you understand your audiences, you can start to date or start to actually push that content that's more relevant to what the audience looks like.
And that's got it. Oh, so I got another question for you. So I don't know a ton about buying ads, but I know they sell CPM, which is cost per thousand.
Impressions.
Okay. So how do the prices for me buying impressions online compare to prices in the physical world?
So for brands and advertiser, there is a huge value in buying a CPM or a thousand impressions within the digital out-of-home environment because it's so new. So if you were to go on YouTube and buy an impression, you might be charged $20, $30, $40 CPM. That means every time an impression is calculated up to 1,000, the advertiser's charged $40. The digital out-of-home space, even though there's been a 20% year-over-year growth on CPM, it's still a very easy way for buyers to transact because right now it's hovering around the $7 to $8 mark. So it's definitely, if an advertiser or a brand wants to augment some of their other digital advertising, Digital at home is a perfect way to do that because it's really the transactional side is the same of them buying online. But the out of home space is audience that they can't get to. Ironically, last month, some of our biggest advertisers were other networks. Meta, for example, TikTok, for example. These are advertisers that are targeting audiences that they can't get to purely online.
Oh, that's so interesting. We're always talking about digital native brands opening up stores to get more customers to drive, obviously, to their online store. So this is similar, you know, marketing to drive people physically into a virtual space.
Yeah, the direct-to-consumer brands are a perfect example because you have this boomerang effect of companies starting online and going offline into physical brick and mortar. But what's happening is the inverse on digital media companies then trying to target with digital out of home the same audiences. And DTC brands love digital signage because they are very used to it. They know how to. They have dynamic content. And that's where you're seeing a very big jump in terms of buyers coming to the space, the DTC brands.
It's actually becoming an expectation as well, too, right, from those brands at the property owners. They want to see this. They want to see, if they're opening up a store, they want to have this evolution, much like a younger generation wants to have and wants to see if they're visiting an asset. They want to see the digitization happening, right?
I feel like I've seen a lot of digital signage in enclosed shopping centers. Jesse, maybe talk a little bit about the, you know, we have open air centers, you know, grocery anchored centers. Are there opportunities? Like, what's the space look like there?
And that's been the biggest, I guess, trend when it comes to conversations and trying to figure this out. There's still challenges in the indoor space, as we know. I mean, Simon's got a fantastic program and you've worked with their team in the past, Joe, as we know, but there's still a lot of opportunities in the indoor space, especially in, you know, not primary markets, more regional centers, but really this conversation around revenue generation and monetization around digital out of home has come from the open air centers, strip centers. It's a challenge. It's been a challenge in the past. And again, you know, there's groups that are getting 18 to 20,000 visitors a day at a grocery anchored center. How we need to monetize that, right? And that's a fantastic opportunity that no one's really been able to capitalize
on. So why haven't they, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. We have a saying within the company is that all physical real estate has inherent media value. It's the infrastructure that you put in place to extract that media value for the benefit of not only the owners, but also the tenants. So when you think about traffic in the physical world, you know, we're social beings. We're always out. We want to have experiences. We want to go and engage socially. So the value that the real estate owners and the retailers have is that they already have that built-in traffic patterns that they've had consistently for years. Whereas a pure online website or a mobile app, they have to drive that traffic to then monetize that traffic. Real estate owners already have it. So it's really building the infrastructure within all of these different verticals, regardless if it's a grocery store, a lifestyle center, a neighborhood center, is that there's traffic there, it could be monetized. And it's the infrastructure you put in place to monetize that.
Well, especially when we're talking with some groups that have 400, 500 centers times 18 to 20,000 visitors a day.
Yeah, I mean,
the scale is there,
absolutely.
Right?
I mean, ultimately, if you think about it, digital at home, even though it's being fueled by one of the oldest mediums in the world, is still in its infancy stage. What we've heard, especially on the retailer side, is there will be potentially 5 to 20 displays per retail store within the next 5 to 10 years. So, and part of that is because the newer generations that have been born and dealt with digital signage and digital interaction their whole lives come to expect the same thing that they're doing on their mobile devices that they want in the store. And that really leads to our next point where we are driving digital engagement beyond just disseminating a digital ad. It's all about disseminating that ad, creating emotional connection with the visitor or the audience, and then leading that to a transaction or a lift in brand. You know, so it's really interesting in terms of the next functionality of this industry, which is purely the digital engagement side.
What's an example of how that might work where an image would, I don't know, increase sales? Is it like you're putting an image of a hamburger and then the hamburger sales go up, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we've already done this. So imagine that you see a point of entry digital display advertising a Gatorade ad, right? And then there's a QR code that goes into a mobile experience when you scan it, meaning that you're dropping that Gatorade coupon in your Apple wallet. You go into the store, you grab a Gatorade, you go to the point of sale, you show them that code, you get $1 off your Gatorade. All of that transaction from seeing it, engaging it, taking the product, and then transacting on that product could happen in less than 60 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And that's been another major challenge in retail media too, right, is measurement and attribution. And for myself, I spent a lot of time in retail tech around digital, specifically around attribution and incrementality. And exactly what you're describing is a fantastic example of how you're driving incremental sales. And I think that's an important piece too, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is where you have a mobile device in everybody's hand, and that mobile device is now syncing directly with a digital design somewhere in the environment. So the omnichanneling effect is perfect for advertisers that are advertising on mobile devices, but it's also the bridge, the segue between that digital sign in the public space and then creating that engagement with that brand.
I see. And when you talk about this attribution issue, it's solved once you kind of buy something, you scan the QR code, then you're their customer and they know who you are, and it makes that connection.
Yeah, and it just doesn't have to be a coupon redemption. We have multiple layers of engagement, whether that's, you want to skip the line, so you order your food and then you pick it up. You know, the ability to create a product lift around what you're doing, meaning that we do a lot with online gaming and the ability to get a benefit if you were in an environment and watching the game, you could initially kind of engage with that digital display and then get a benefit, whether it's an app use benefit or some other benefit.
I mean, you've definitely sold me on the opportunity here. What is the hurdle? Like, you have a group that has a big portfolio of properties that, and you say, hey, there's all this opportunity. What do they say is the reason why they're not doing it already? Like, what's the hurdle?
Yeah, so it comes down to infrastructure and management and monetization. I always say we do the three M's and we do it very well. We monetize, we manage, and we monitor the network. And you have to have all three of those components to truly make a successful network, because the programmatic spend are mostly national advertisers, right? And those national advertisers, their spend is typically in the top 20 markets. But we know there's a huge number of markets in the U.S., especially in North America. We have a 50-state approach of not only within the U.S., but also deploying in Canada. And that approach is that we're adding different channels to different markets to maximize the monetization piece. Because maybe some other markets might not be programmatically enabled, but it could be hyper-locally. So we actually built all of these different channels, whether it's StreetPost, which is a social media platform channel that we use, or Smartify Ads, which is a hyper-local ad platform that we use to drive rate and occupancy for the benefit of the property owner and the retailer in all markets across the country.
Let's say I'm a company that owns a portfolio of 100 shopping centers, and I'm like, I want to do this, and I got to know you, Joe, so I'm going to partner with Smartify. What is it like? Am I just paying a lot of money for a lot of equipment and then I get fees for the ads? Like, how does all the like work?
Yeah, so we really have two programs. I always say we're a digital place-based ad network and we're a retail media ad network. And what that means is there's distinction between in-store and out-of-store, right? So we have different programs. And I think ultimately taking a step back is that we had built out a network operations center in Miami. That network operations center is really the brain behind managing and monitoring multiple networks, thousands of units across the country. It's also, there's a redundant network because Samsung C&T, which is one of our early investors, and we work with Samsung a lot in terms of monetizing and utilizing their network operations center to create the operational excellence. Because first, you need to have an operational platform that manages this, right? Because if you have a display that's down, nobody's going to be able to monetize that. So first and foremost, it's the ability to scale up a massive infrastructure, but we also initiate 100% of the CapEx. So we're investing in our owner developers and our retail partners, and we're investing in those properties so that they don't have to deal with the specific CapEx. And then typically it's a rev share. So But there's also multiple value adds. It's not only an additional ancillary revenue rev share to the property owners, is we allocate a percentage on the time for all of their own messaging. We have content designers on staff. We're creating dynamic content for them. So ultimately, we want to digitize a lot of these portfolios across the entire portfolio, not cherry pick specific locations.
And so if you're putting up the CapEx in the beginning, you're only going to do it with a portfolio of properties that you know are going to be successful, right?
When we say all physical real estate has inherent media value, we believe it. You know, so it really depends on the form factors and how you integrate a property. Take into account CapEx, right? So the investment actually has to match the long-term value of the property. But like what everybody is saying is that there will be a digital display in every single retailer and property owner across the country. You know, so we are getting in early to, in essence, seed a lot of these markets, because eventually, if you look at programmatic adoption, programmatic transactions will happen in every single market. The only reason it's not right now happening is that there's not enough critical mass for a programmatic buyer to have the reach and the frequency that they need within a market. So yeah, there's going to be a seeding of the market, and then we'll continue to grow that market out. But ultimately, you know, it comes down to making sure that we're targeting the customer along that journey. And that could be driving into a lifestyle center, plugging into an EV charger station with a digital display, and then looking at a directory with a digital display or a point of entry all the way to the point of sale. So that's our main focus, is looking at all of that journey from entry to transaction.
And so the EV charging stations, that I hadn't even thought of that, but yeah, that's going to be part of it. Right. So that's a real opportunity for, you know.
Absolutely. And we have multiple EV charger stations out there right now, because there is an added benefit, right, for the consumer. It comes down to the experience for the audience. It comes down to the experience of the visitor, that they want to have a good experience, whether it's charging their car, getting the information they need, transacting, maybe skipping a line and ordering at a kiosk so that they can pick up their food. So that part and parcel creates that really important experience for the audience so that they could come back. That visitor is really crucial.
Are there any case studies or examples you're able to talk about?
You know, we are working on a case study right now with a pretty large company that dealt with digital signage, product placement, and saw close to a 30% lift on transactions of that utilizing digital signage. Now, even a 10% lift at the point of sale is huge, but a 30% lift is enormous. So we know, and we're going to initiate a white paper on this, you know, to the industry so that they could see kind of how that happened. But everybody knows that digital signage leads to higher transactions, leads to a higher engagement. But right now, like I said, it's still in its infancy, you know, and, you know, I would say digital signage is maybe 2-4% built out. So it's a massive opportunity globally in terms of how to build this out.
So when you say 2-4% built out, you mean we need to build out these networks of digital signage, right? Physically built out.
Absolutely. And I always say that, you know, if you can't explain to me why that digital sign is there, it shouldn't be there. There has to be a purpose of why that display is there to engage the audience, right? So that's why an EV charging station there's a purpose for an EV charging station, just like a digital directory, just like a POS system. So it's the way our approach is, when we work with owner developers, it's really a consultative approach where we're assessing their entire portfolio, giving them guidance on how to properly digitize, because that standardization in the industry is so crucial to the success of both the networks and how buyers buy advertising.
So you'll sort of analyze the property and you'll say, this is where it makes sense. We're not going to just throw up a screen everywhere. So give me I want to dig into that a little bit more, just because I think it's interesting. Talk to me about the kinds of places. So you mentioned EV charging, point of sale. So you're standing and paying for something and there's a digital display. The directory, obviously, which I use all the time because I go to a lot of malls for my work and I get lost. What other places are good for digital signs?
So, you know, it first is based on the vertical, right? The classification of the location. So it could be a closed area center. It could be a mall. It could be a lifestyle center. It could be a small neighborhood center. But looking at that in the aggregate is that, okay, where's the marquee signage? Is there opportunity for large format LED? If there's not, where are the nooks and crannies that are the undervalued within that portfolio, whether it's a blank wall space that could be digitized, or a common space area that could have a double-sided freestanding kiosk environment, or a blank window that could be digitized in a way so that you have a point of entry. So, you know, that's why we have multiple form factors within our digital arsenal, is to really make sure that that digital sign is integrated in the property, not just added to the property.
And I know, and I'm sure the signs themselves count things like foot traffic and impressions and things like that. But do you, before you put the sign in, are you going in and doing a study to see what the foot traffic is going to be at that location?
Yeah, so we had built what we define as the MVS. It's the Media Value Score for Physical Real Estate. It's an algorithm that ingests the specific lat long, the address, the vertical, and it gives us some guidance in terms of types of quantities of endpoints, types of endpoints, and then also revenue estimates about historically what other endpoints in that area has been produced. So it gives us a very good guide in terms of understanding kind of how we properly integrate into that property.
This is cool. MVS, media value score, what is it, like 0 to 100 on a scale of...
Yeah, the media value score, it actually ties into the revenue. So it actually gives us a revenue estimate.
Oh, I like that even more.
Right, because we know the top line. So every endpoint that we deploy, we audit it by a third party. That auditor is assessing the impression load per 15 seconds ads. So every time a 15-second ad plays, it accumulates X amount of impressions. So we know the full 100% occupancy of a specific endpoint or a group of endpoints in a property, and that gives us our top line revenue target based on CPM. So we give a very good estimate in terms of high-low revenue estimates. It's really crucial for owner developers to understand if they're going to get into this game, to understand what's the upside revenue-wise.
What's the place with the highest MVS? Is it like, I don't know, like Times Square maybe or something like that? I don't know.
You know, it's interesting because it's a dynamic calculation. So if you have a huge amount of supply like New York has, it actually decreases the potential revenue because you have more supply transacting with a specific amount of demand. But we've seen huge MVS scores down in Phoenix, in San Diego, down in Miami, markets that you wouldn't think were hugely going to be successful in terms of digital adoption, but they are. It's interesting that, you know, a lot of this is around the programmatic buying, the national ad buying. But hyperlocal is not even attributed to that yet, but it has the biggest opportunity there, because when you have, like, say, a local real estate agent that maybe only be operating in one zip code, it's very difficult for them to transact on digital signage in the out-of-home space. That's why we created Smartify Ads. They could literally look at all the available assets, upload their content, or even create their own content in our content hub, and then transact on a digital display anywhere within their targeted area, all within minutes.
So I'm trying to sell a house in a ritzy neighborhood, and I'm targeting the exact person who might buy it in the shopping center where they're shopping at. And I'm also ensuring that they're the only ones that are seeing it, and people who can't afford to buy this house aren't even seeing that ad.
Right.
Wow. I
mean, and you would be surprised to know is that it's cost less for a local real estate agent to advertise on a digital display than actually put an ad in the paper. Now, the ad in the paper doesn't really do that much, but the ability to do it and target that specific audience that they want to go after is hugely crucial. And then you add a layer of engagement, meaning that you could scan and now set an appointment or have that agent call you directly in front of that screen.
Some sort of call to action, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that. The call to action, that's the thing that marketers say gets you the thing to get you to do. Sometimes it's just brand awareness, right? I mean, you were talking about different social media brands. Is there always a call to action, or does it kind of depend?
Well, you know, this is a human adoption type of technology, right? So most people in kind of in the public space are not trained to kind of reach out and engage with a digital ad, right? So there is going to be some adoption that happens over time, but ultimately, you know, that's happening in a big way where most consumers, most audience individuals seeing a sign, not just to do a touchscreen, because eventually touchscreen could go away and be replaced with the mobile device in your hand. It's a lot easier to tap a digital screen and now you have the directory in your hand and now you're using it on a one-to-one basis versus a one-to-many.
Right? Look at QR code on TVs, right? The amount of QR codes that have shown, I mean, legacy infrastructure, like legacy technology 6 years ago, 7 years ago, QR code, no one uses it. All of a sudden, since COVID, really, it's been this like, you watch pretty much every ad on TV if people still watch, you know, regular television. There's some sort of call to action, right? Used to be pick up the phone and call, and now it's scan the QR code from your couch or your sofa.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of happening in this world too.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's a really important point for property owners to understand is that, you know, typical traditional ad home only garnered maybe 4% of global ad spend. And that's very, very minimal because it was only a brand play for billboards and for other types of traditional assets. What's happened now is that as advertisers are buying less print, less radio, and less broadcast, those dollars are not disappearing. They're moving into other mediums. And they're moving into mediums that are purely digital, that have the opportunity for engagement and the ability to transact on. And that's why we've seen a big uplift from that 4% now to 7%, and it continues to grow. And a lot of those transactions are actually in the digital out-of-home space, not in the traditional out-of-home space.
So what if a podcast wants to get more listeners? We could do a call to action where you scan a QR code and it takes you to Spotify. Subscribe to the Where We Buy podcast, maybe. I don't know.
Dropping that file right in your phone. So
The
engagement piece is really kind of, you know, bridging the gap between that emotional connection of I see something, I like it. How do I engage it? And how do I get it really quickly?
So you've already sort of touched on this, but what do you think the future for digital out of home looks like?
Well, there's a couple of points. Displays are getting more and more dynamic, whether it's LED or LCD or even translucent ad glass. Eventually, what we're seeing in this space is that every piece of glass could potentially be a display without actually integrating. I've seen, you know, translucent ad glass matching the parameters of a storefront. But then the engagement piece is getting a lot better. You're gonna have apps that show up having the ability to engage clients. So there's a huge omni-channeling opportunity between mobile, between podcasts, between retail media transactions and digital signage, because advertisers are looking for that experience. They just don't want to buy a campaign and disseminate that campaign. They want to have legs to that campaign. The only way you're going to have legs to that campaign for the brand is to keep it ongoing, whether it's, you know, you see it on a screen and now it's on your phone and now you're actually activating or transacting with that in real time.
Do you see a level of screen fatigue happening or in that example as well too? Like, how do you sort of envision, you know, people just, because we tend to just sort of gloss over things sometimes as regular, we're in our phones or whatever. It's like, if you have screens everywhere, does it lessen to your point about Times Square, does it lessen the impact?
Absolutely. I think that there's a dissection between your personal screen, you know, that phone or that TV in your house, and the public screen. The public screen always has to have a purpose. I go back to the purpose because it has to make an experience better for you, right? Whether you're skipping the line to order food or whether you want to enter that storefront, but the product is already there waiting, or providing you with some knowledge that maybe you didn't know was out there before, right? Because, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, screen fatigue is a big thing. Ultimately, it has to come down to purpose, right? We are not in the business of just plastering every blank wall space with digital signage. There has to be an experience and the purpose of how we integrate properly for the benefit of the audience.
You know, we really touched on sort of Smartify Media in the property owner space, but the prowess, you have, you know, Where We Buy podcast has number of listeners from the residential space, from the office space. There is some, I guess, tie-ins to those spaces as well, Joe. Maybe just touch on that if you could.
Yeah, great point. So we're agnostic on the vertical, meaning that we operate in upwards of 30 plus different classifications on physical real estate. We're in offices, we're in gyms, we're in lifestyle centers. So for us, you know, when we say, you know, all physical properties, we're not just talking about, you know, the lifestyle, we're saying all physical property. Anywhere that you're going with intent, whether you live there, you play there, you shop there, that's where we want to be. And that's where we want to add the benefit of digital signage.
I see. So it could be, you know, an office lobby, multifamily lobby, probably not in my home, but, you know, in the, if I live in an apartment building in the lobby.
but think about how much residential we're building around shopping centers now, right, too, and redevelopment and all this sort of stuff. Imagine the continuity between the residential building and taking the customer on the full journey from the time, maybe not the time they leave their place, like right outside the door, but, you know, down through towards the center, you could actually have signs and screens that, or signage that, that leads them places, right? And drives that customer journey
that customer
right from
journey.
Residential. Yep. Right?
Customer journey is so important. And it could start when you leave your house, because if you're in an apartment complex, you go down to the lobby and now there's a digital screen that shows you, you know, Uber's in the area or what's the next train that's coming down the pipeline.
Yep.
You know, it's things like that. There's a value of knowledge for the consumer to get along their day to help them, you know, to benefit throughout their day.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. Joe, Jesse, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks
this has been a good
us.
One.
Thanks for having us, James.
If you like this podcast, do me a favor. Go into the app that you're listening to and give us a rating. Or even better, give us a little review. Write just a sentence about what you like about the show. You can subscribe to Where We Buy on the iPhone podcast app, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can always find us on the web at wherewebuy.show. We also post a ton of cool videos and interviews on LinkedIn and YouTube, video tours, interviews with folks that you won't hear on this audio podcast. You can check it out by going to the website everythingweknow.show. If you have a specific question about retail, shopping centers, or retail real estate, you can feel free to connect with me and send me a message on LinkedIn. You can find me by searching for James Cook, JLL. Our theme music is Run in the Night by the Good Lauds under Creative Commons license.